This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
She did an interview like right before this trial started. It's not the Keith Morrison Dateline one. It was, I believe, like with one of the local ones out there in Idaho. And they, she was talking about, you know, life behind bars and what it's like. And she's like starting a little cult up back there. It sounds like.
Told you, we actually said that.
Yes, so we did.
I think it was you and I, you know, like right when she got convicted, it was like, what do you think life behind bars will be for her? And I said, it's actually going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
From her perspective, because she is charismatic. Mm-hmm. She spews a lot of crazy shit that she can rationalize, and she's going to attract people to her life in behind bars. And also there's going to be the nutters out there that want to, that I guarantee you she's getting fan mail, probably getting a couple wacky guys that want to marry her. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's all happening because crazy attracts crazy, man.
She was talking about how she believes it's her mission in life, her mission from God now is to be behind bars and to, you know, bring this enlightenment. And I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but, you know, bring her version of the word of God to them and to help them and be there for these beautiful women who are on death row.
This is perfect for her.
You exactly.
She's got a captive audience.
Yep.
She can help people feel great about themselves, and she doesn't worry about her food or shelter anymore. That's why she's killing people off and taking their life insurance, because you know, she's a failed cosmetologist. Mm-hmm.
The commissary.
She's meant to do this. She's put on this earth to be behind bars. There you go.
She didn't go super big into religion this week, which I was kind of surprised by, but I could tell she was getting a little triggered. And here's a moment of that. This is her talking with one of her former close friends, and this is her discussing a bit of religion in here, which, again, I think this is going to go deeper eventually, but here's our first inklings that she's getting a little triggered.
I've been accused of being out of the scope of the LDS religion when this is exactly in the scope of the LDS religion.
All right, I guess to the extent you're comparing yourself to these biblical figures, I'll allow it.
Comparing to biblical figures.
Was Elisha translated? Yes, I believe so.
Okay. But you don't know that John the Revelator was translated as well?
I can't remember.
And then the three Nephites in the Book of Mormon, they're translated as well?
No, there were three. You asked me their names. I don't remember their names.
I wasn't asking their names.
Bad Mormon.
Do you know who they are? As in, are you aware of them? I'm sorry. I'll be more specific. Are you aware of the three Nephites in the Book of Mormon?
Yes.
That they were translated?
Yes.
So is it fair to say that that isn't uncommon in the Christian belief system to believe in people being translated?
I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that question for all of Christianity.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you a Christian that believes in the Bible?
Yes.
I object, Your Honor, to relevance.
Who's a judge?
Patience of a saint.
Hurry up. He's just trying to figure it out, too.
Yes, I believe in the Bible, of course.
And Elijah in the Bible is translated, right?
Yes.
And you believe in that, right?
Yes.
And you're a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is that correct?
Correct.
So that would not be out of the scope of what you believe. That's all I'm asking.
Correct.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Everybody's like, you got anything else? And with that, I mean, I think she's trying to get at, okay.
What should you mean by translated? Translated like killed?
I don't know if translated means killed or translated means like she's a wiser human being.
Yeah.
I think it's like she's gotten the powers.
And I apologize. I haven't heard that word used yet.
Yeah. I don't think translated means killed. I think it means that, like, she has superpowers now, basically. Like God has looked at her, and so she's comparing herself to biblical figures.
Elevated.
In the Mormon.
Elevated. Yes. There you go. Elevated.
Yes. So she's, like, up there in her mind. So she's trying to somehow contextualize, well, these people did it, so why would it be unreasonable if I'm that, too? I think that's where she's going with it.
That makes sense now. Yeah. But why?
Sure, it'll make a ton of sense to the jury. Like, well, she's translated. Well, that explains everything. She knows more than we do. Clearly, she can go kill people. Let's let her out to a playground. It's like, what the hell?
Hey, and everyone's safe as long as you don't have a life insurance policy.
Exactly. And that's part of it. It's like, are you, you know, do you believe what I believe, kind of? And do you have life insurance? And if you do, well, guess what? You're going to be on her hit list. So there is some of the religion beginning to be sprinkled in here. She seems a little triggered by it. I'm going to guess she's going to go deeper on this. Do you think?
Yeah, and you make a fair point of that too. And I think with the cabal of people around her in prison, and then she's obviously getting counsel and advice and guidance from people of knowledge. I mean, there's no way she learned how to talk like this on her own, you know? And so I think that she's probably advised to stay completely away from religion because she sounds like a nutter. Mm-hmm. Or they're not say that she sounds like a nutter. They're going to say that the uninformed, the unenlightened, and the jury are not going to understand what you're saying. So in order for your message to come across, you need to avoid it. But like you said, when she gets triggered and emotionally hijacked, which will happen under cross when you get emotionally hijacked, you go to your core beliefs, you go to core of who you are. I think it's going to come out then. And that, I think that's going to be the episodes of this season that I think are going to be the most interesting, because when she is like, well, because what's happening now? Let's just analyze this behaviorally. Mm-hmm. What's happening now? She's in control.
Yeah.
She's in control of what she's presenting. She's in control of her words. She's in control of the questions. Some of them are being disputed, you know, or pushed back on with objections. But in general, she prepared. She's the center of attention. So she's completely in her own comfort zone when she is it. Mm-hmm. And she's asking exactly what she wants of who she wants. No sense to anyone else because she's in control. I think when she loses control, you're going to see a different side of her come out.
Yeah, I did too. And I don't think she's going to be able to hold anything back. Her brother, Adam Cox, took the stand as well. He was not, I believe, in the first trial. This is the sane brother. I actually know him. I worked with him in radio in Wichita years ago. He's been on this show as well. And him and the uncle actually have a podcast, the Silver Linings podcast, and they talk about a lot of the stuff that's been going on in this case from their personal perspective. This is the first time I've talked to him about this case, but this is the first time I think a lot of us have learned just how involved he was in the moments leading up to Charles' death. And in no way do I think he has anything to do with it, but I think he was just as blindsided. It's interesting to hear Lori try and make a connection with him over enchiladas in court. Let's take a look.
I thought so too.
Mr. Cox, how long has it been since we've seen each other in person?
Don't know.
When was the last time you saw me?
I don't recall.
So, has it been a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years,
something
6 years,
like
7 years, 8 years?
Something.
Okay. So, you have no idea?
Nope.
You have no idea when the last time you saw me in person?
I don't know the year or how many years it's been.
Okay, so did you see me at Colby's wedding in January 2018?
No, I was not there.
You didn't come to Colby's wedding?
No, I did not.
So did you see me sometime that year at my house?
Possibly.
Where Colby got married? That house.
I did see you at that house, yes.
At least one time?
Yes.
So possibly in 2018?
Yes.
And when was the last time we had any communications?
The last time I remember our communications was you and I were speaking in the kitchen when the family was over.
Okay, so you think that was that time in 2018?
I think so.
Okay. And were we eating my green chili chicken enchilada?
Do not remember that.
You do not remember that?
Nope.
Is that what I made every time we had a family get together, which was like 10 times a year?
I don't remember that.
Okay. And when was the last time that we had a phone call or text message?
I have no idea.
Were we eating my green chili chicken enchiladas?
So I think an important thing for people that are bored listening to her, like me,
yeah,
to really take example of here is what you're witnessing is psychopathy in action.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't get triggered, you know, not just in this interaction with her brother, but anyone, like we were saying, she has such a neutral aspect to herself or an effect to herself because she's not emotionally connected to anyone. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what she's saying, she's able to maintain cognitive pragmatic approach to her questions she's trying to get across. But that's why she's not responding. That's why she's not seeing an emotional response to anything, because except she'll get angry maybe. It's all about grandiosity, because that's all what, again, I'm not a licensed clinician. I haven't seen any results of a psychopathy test on her or anything like that. But this is what psychopathy looks like. Zero effect, you know, with interacting with human beings. That's why she's so boring. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there. There's zero there.
A lot of times you think of psychopathy and it's this crazy, raging person. No, it's most of the time it's this.
So what happens is what psychopaths will do is they adapt the environment. So we're seeing this really, really good. So I'm kind of having some pops in my mind on this one. So what psychopaths do very, very, very well, and not psychopaths that kill people, but just psychopathy in general. It's a continuum, you know, from low end to high end, is they have the ability to morph themselves into their environment so they can be predators in that environment very, very well. That's what it's a natural part of who they are. They don't even think about it. And so they become stalkers. They become manipulators of the entire environment. That's why I said I thought she's going to do very well in prison because she's going to learn that environment, just like I think Alec Murdoch's going to do very well in prison.
Yeah.
They manipulate their entire environments for their self-gain. Mm-hmm. And so what we're seeing here is we're seeing her as a defense attorney in the courtroom morphing herself into what it needs to be as a defense attorney.
Be curious if she had more reps in being a defense attorney, just a few more trials under her belt. How, like, would she improve? Would she do better at that?
I think she would.
For being her first round here.
You know, it depends on the amount of, she lacks any humility whatsoever, because you need humility to learn. But if she's thinking in terms of, boy, that's a really good question, because no humility, can't learn, you know, but at the same time, though, she's going to get, it would depend on how if the responses she's getting are serving her predatory needs.
Yeah.
If they were, which again, it's hard to understand what exactly her gain is that she's looking for. So in her mind, if she's gaining what she wanted to gain from the interaction, then she's not going to improve. But if she wasn't, then she's going to reflect and think about how she can manipulate that world a little bit better, and then she would improve. So it really depends on what her context of success is in this situation.
Translated being, she was just talking about that. Here is Adam. This, I believe, is with the prosecution. Asking him about what she was talking about when she talked about being a translated being or becoming a translated being to Adam. Let's take a look.
Lori told me that she was in the process of translating from a mortal human being to an immortal human being, a celestial state.
That's something that the LDS religion supports?
I haven't heard of it in that it's happened here on Earth yet.
Did you ever hear her talking about being married to someone that is relevant in your religion?
Yes, I have heard that.
Did she tell that to you?
I don't know. I can't recall her telling me that, but I remember other people telling me that.
Okay. Was there anything else that you recall her telling you that she believed that seemed outside the LDS religion?
Yes. There was a time where she told me that she had more priesthood authority than the priesthood.
And why, can you explain for us what that means, why that was significant to you?
In our religion, the men hold the priesthood, and she said that she's in a state where she's above that. I didn't quite understand it, but very strange.
Did you confront her about these beliefs?
Confront her? No.
Did you discuss with her about these beliefs?
I just let her say what she wanted to say.
Was there ever a conversation where, when she was telling you these things, where she asked if you thought she was crazy?
Yes.
How did you respond to that?
I said, I don't know if you're crazy, but what you're telling me is not true.
So, again, this is kind of where, and I'm not trying to insult LDS, but you walk people up to the line of human beings being something that they're not, and then they take it a little bit further and go, well, why can't I be these magical people? It's not surprising when they walk off the cliff, and there's a lot of them that seem to walk off the cliff. Lori just happened to go, like, way off the cliff.
Yeah, when you deal with mental health issues, challenges, or deviant behavior, and they're able to grab on to a system that's already pre-established and then take it and manipulate it for their own needs, mm-hmm. that's what happens when you deal with LDS or any religion, really. It just happens to be the flavor of the day, you know, in the last bunch of years that LDS has been the brunt of the experiment for these people.
Yeah, they got a problem with extreme thinking and honing it in. Let's do one more. This is Kay Woodcock. As we know, the Kay and Larry, they were the ones who initially had JJ, and it was the grandchild, and right. Lori ended up adopting JJ, and we know what happened after that. She was one of the grandparents that was begging police to look into this. Where are the grandkids? And after many, 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 many weeks, and them even seeing Lori and believing her excuses, they obviously found out they were dead, and then they arrested them. Let's take a look at Kay Woodcock kind of talking about the relationship problems that Charles was talking about having at that time with Lori.
Yes, I did.
In 2019, again, without going into what Charles said, did you ever believe that Charles was concerned for his safety?
Charles was absolutely concerned for his safety. Lori had sent me a text, I think it was on a Thursday, that she and Charles were fighting because of some stuff she came up with, and that she and JJ and Tylee were at a hotel. Well, I guess Tylee was, I'm not sure. And because she didn't want to have any fighting, so they went to a hotel, and I came out. I knew Charles the next day. That's when she sent it to me, and then I just really didn't. I didn't call Charles. I knew he'd call me, and he sure enough did, and he was a mess, and so I flew out the next day out here to help him with JJ and just to come and talk to him and see what was going on. He was alone, and Lori's family turned their backs on him and JJ. Okay.
Let's just kind of break it all down.
All right.
You got a lot that you remember. So you said that you got a text from Lori indicating that she and JJ and Tylee were at a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said that Charles then called you maybe the next day?
Yeah.
And you came out here to Arizona?
Yes.
When you came out here to Arizona, did you become aware at that point that there was a big problem now with their relationship?
There was a huge problem now with their relationship.
And during this time when you had come out here, do you remember approximately when that was?
Like the 1st of February of 2019, or the 2nd. It was right in there.
When you came out here, did you then speak with Charles about his concerns for his safety? Just yes or no.
About his what?
His concerns for his safety.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And you also have her talking about Lori not wanting to have JJ or Tylee or him in her life anymore. So that doesn't play very well for her, where she's actively talking about not wanting her kids or her ex-husband in her world right after they all die.
Yeah, what's interesting, it's we all pick up on different things when we watch these things. What's interesting to me is that this happened in 2019. She remembered the first thing being a Thursday. And she remembers it was either the 1st or the 2nd of February, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, what did you do on the 1st or 2nd of February in 2019? What did you do in February of 2019?
Well, I can give you every single day. On the first day, I started it at a Burger King. No, but keep in mind, I mean, she's been living this this story for the last however many years now. So sure. She has some of those dates down. But yes, like right off the bat, I don't – yeah, no idea, you know?
Right. And well, and my point here being that we don't remember average days. Our brains don't work that way. We remember days that are really, really challenging and bad, or we remember really, really awesome days. And so the fact that this was such an emotional impact on her, what was going on, you know, that she travels down there, that there's major things going on in the marriage, and she made the trip to do that and remembers the dates very specifically indicates, you know, granted, I know it's testimony and she's doing it and everything, but at the same time, though, behaviorally, it's very congruent with where there's a major problem. This is not made up in her life.
No, not at all. And there you go. That's where we're at this moment in time of this recording and the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. It's going to be picking up again. And of course, we're going to keep covering it until its end. It's still in the hands of the state, and they are going to continue to bring up their witnesses. It's going to get very interesting once it's over to the defense to see who Lori brings in. I wonder if Lori is going to bring anyone in that's going to like benefit her in any sort of way, or if she's going to squander all of that too without even realizing it.
She will bring in who she thinks will benefit her. So for what I said earlier, I think what we're really witnessing here is, again, non-clinical assessment, where we're seeing psychopathy in action.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.